Hi, it's Michael Senoff with Michael Senoff's HardToFindSeminars.com. Another exciting interview. This one's titled, How to Find and Fix Leaky Revenue Spots for Optimal Results on Every Profit Stream. Business owners usually don't think about marketing. They're too busy with the day-to-day tasks, so when they need to make more money, their minds naturally default to advertising. And this would be great if that was their real problem. But most time, there are holes in the marketing systems they have in place that are causing them to lose profits. And according to Brad Gaines, marketing consultant and owner of Reset Strategies, those profit leaks need to be found and fixed before any new lead and customers are brought in, or they'll just be wasted. Additionally, Brad says there are usually about 50 to 100 revenue points that already exist with any business that, with just a little bit of optimization, will increase revenues without advertising and need to be optimized before advertising is brought into the picture too. So in this audio interview, you'll hear how to find and fix leaky revenue spots in a business or in your business and how to squeeze the fullest yield out of every profit stream. You'll also hear the only four ways businesses make money and how each of those ways can be broken down in order to find profit leaks and additional profit streams. You'll hear the mind conditioning businesses need to do with past customers to make sure they're never forgotten and the six touch points that make that mind conditioning happen. You'll hear a step-by-step dissection of one of Brad's clients to see exactly how he transformed an optometrist's office that he conservatively estimated was losing $3.1 million a year in lost revenue and how he immediately turned things around. You'll hear about the only big way to conduct and analyze customer surveys. You'll hear the simple way Brad adds a cheers kind of atmosphere to a busy doctor's office so that every customer felt like the staff knew their name and cared about them without actually having to rely on staff members to develop this attitude. You'll hear about real-life examples of profit leaks, like Brad's company uncovered almost 5,000 patients at a doctor's office who had canceled an appointment and were never called back. The research he did that uncovered these leaks and the strategies he put into place that fixed them fast. You'll hear how Brad was able to comfortably create and capitalize on the best warranty in the business for his clients, giving them a powerful, unique selling proposition just by doing a bit of quick and clever research and the amazing way that paid off for them. You'll hear all about the almost sneaky psychological tactic that people are more drawn to preventing loss than they are in making gains and how Brad uses that to his personal advantage in his own business. The best marketing strategies go way beyond fancy graphics and social media. They involve a thorough examination of the strengths and weaknesses of an organization so that profit leaks are found and fixed. This not only gives the business an immediate profit bump, but also makes sure results of every ad dollar are maximized and stay maximized so waste doesn't happen. And in this audio interview, you'll get a step-by-step look at exactly how it's done. Now let's get going. Hi, I'm Michael Senoff, founder and CEO of HardToFindSeminars.com. For the last 5 years, I've interviewed the world's best business and marketing minds. Along the way, I've created a successful publishing business all from home from my two-car garage. Now my challenge is to build the world's largest free resource for online downloadable MP3 audio business interviews. I knew I needed a site that contained strategies, solutions, and inside angles to help you live better, to save and make more money, to stay healthier, and to get more out of life. I've learned a lot in the last 5 years, and today I'm going to show you the skills you need to survive.
This is Chris Costello reporting for Michael Senoff's HardToFindSeminars.com. So we're talking with Brad Gaines of Reset Strategies. Brad, great to be talking with you again.
Thank you, Chris. Always look forward to our conversation.
So one of the things that you talk about, which is really, you know, a timely and important concept right now, is how businesses can move forward without spending a lot of money on advertising, right?
Yes, that's correct. And certainly counterintuitive to how most business owners think about growing. The number one method that most people tend to go to or to implement is situation, you can start to see retention rates increasing, average transactions increasing, frequent purchases increasing, sales conversions increasing. My firm concentrates on the only four ways to grow a business. And again, in this order, the first way is to increase the number of new prospects. So going back earlier, most people feel that the only way to do that is by advertising to complete strangers. But there's other ways to increase prospects. You can increase your referrals. You can joint venture with another business, non-competing. You can strategic alliance. And there are a couple of other items that you can do there. The second is increasing the average transaction, which means how much money someone spends with you at a given time. So if the average transaction in a company or firm is $1,000, what are some of the ways that you can get the average transaction to be $1,500 or $1,600, which essentially leaves you with more margin and more profit? The third way is increasing the frequency of purchases. Sometimes people would just make a purchase one time with the company, and the company feels that they've got no reason to come back. They bought everything they needed that one particular case. But often what we find is people are going elsewhere for those same purchases again with other competitors. So it's important that you make sure you keep those clients in your house. And the last is increasing your conversion rate. Companies that have salespeople, they may have salespeople that sell 2 out of 10 appointments or 3 out of 10 appointments, but they also have a salesperson selling 5 out of 10 or 6 out of 10 or 7 out of 10. So imagine if you only have 2 of those and 10 of the other type that's closing 20 or 30%. What would happen to the business if you're able to get those 2 out of 10 and 3 out of 10 salespeople to catch up with the A players, and we're now converting 5, 6, 7 out of 10? Now you've just increased your close ratio and also your profits just by making some changes and some tweaks in the sales process to get performance up. So those are the 4 ways to grow a business. The only 4 ways to do it are by those 4 formulas. And one of the things that Reset Strategies specializes in is taking a look at a business over and above its advertising strategy. You know, when Reset Strategies comes in, we take a look at the positioning, the branding, the messaging, the sales process, the reception at the door if it's a retail space, how the phones are being answered if it's a company that people call into, what the follow-up looks like. Are you engineering referrals or are they happening accidentally? Are you innovating new ways to get more prospects to buy more from you while they're at your location? Upselling, what is your web marketing look like? Are you converting people that come online to give you a call? You're already paid for the website. You already paid for the design. You already paid for the marketing of it. Are you really converting as many people as you possibly could from that website into sales? It's a very, very, very heavy, intensive, intrepid investigation of where your company is performing, how it's performing, where it's underperforming, and where it's leaking revenue. So the total gain is, how do you stop losing money? You see, the focus on many people is, how do I gain more money? But the interesting question is, well, how much could you be losing now? So how do you stop the leak? How do you stop the profit erosions from happening and always depending upon new dollars to grow your business when the dollars that you've already spent could be optimized to bring in more profits? I'll give you a great case study here. This was a very lengthy reset period. It took a little over 18 months. Normally, our resets are geared to occur within 12 to 14 months, but most of our clients have been with us 3 or more years, and it was an eye care practice, and if we know anything about healthcare lately, we know that that industry has gotten completely bamboozled and has been completely thrown in flux from all the regulation, all the reimbursements that have been cut, and the ability to offer services at an affordable rate based on reimbursement dollars and the Affordable Care Act. So we were called in a ophthalmologist practice that looks at your vision, your eyes, and they also sold prescription glasses, sunglasses, so everything that had to do with your vision. And for the past 2 or 3 years, they had been spending quite a bit of money on direct mail. They sent postcards inviting people to come in for an appointment, and they did some things around town, some community marketing, if you will. They ran some newspaper ads, and the doctor did a very diligent job of trying to quantify where his money was going and how it was being returned in terms of sales and appointments and visits and all that good stuff. And when he handed us the tracking sheet over the past 36 months, sad because he had the word referral literally contained thousands of names, meaning that the number was over 1,200. And the direct marketing section and the newspaper section and the cinema advertising section, they all had big fat goose eggs on them. Now, I'm not saying that that was accurate because it can be hard to track advertising unless you have certain protocols into place like call tracking numbers or certain offers that people have to mention or certain things that they'll have to bring in or the timeliness of something. You know, if you run an ad and all of a sudden there's an influx of calls coming in, then typically you can equate that to your messaging that had gone out. But what we had found was there were several different areas during the 30-day reset that we were able to expose $3.1 million worth of lost revenue. And it gets that serious in the reset month. We're able to identify and quantify the number of dollars being lost due to their current systems, processes, marketing, sales approach, and positioning in the market. So when we put the plan together to recover the lost revenue without spending more money on advertising, the first thing we did was we obviously omitted the ad budget, the cinema advertising, the direct marketing advertising, postcard, if you will, and the newspaper advertising we basically put to a halt. Now, most people, when I say reset strategies helps businesses grow without spending more money on advertising, sometimes that can get a little bit confusing with advertising people and marketing people, and they say, oh, what are you, the anti-advertising guy? And it's really not the case. The secret that I'd like to share on this interview is we're not against advertising at all. We love advertising, and we want everybody to advertise where they think they can advertise to get results. The problem is, Chris, is if their advertising does work, they still have so much leakage internally from all their systems, processes, sales approaches, and positioning that they're not squeezing the fullest yield and the fullest profit out of that result. So the 30-day reset is designed to show a client or a company how much money they're losing, how we can recover it in a seven-step program. And of the seven steps, the very last step is advertising. So we fix all the leaks. We fix all the challenges. We plug all the holes until we go back out into market to start advertising again. And one of the things that we realized was once we stopped the advertising budget, we necessarily didn't see a drop in appointments. So that's a perfect example of, okay, so there's no drop in appointments. So therefore, it must be verifying that the advertising may not have been as effective as one would believe. And so that was the first test of, okay, are people responding to the advertising? Because we don't want to put advertising in a bad name. We just wanted to make sure if we saw new patient appointments go down by removing the ads for 60 days, then that would be a telling sign of, oh, okay, people are responding to the ad. So that passed the checkpoint of, okay, great. It looks as if there are other things we can do inside the practice to facilitate better growth and better practice. One of the things that we noticed immediately, because we actually did a survey of their clients and patients, former and inactive and present, we actually called 100 patients from each category. So we called 100 current patients, 100 former patients, which were those patients who hadn't been in for a year, and inactive patients who hadn't been in for 2 years. And one of the things that we uncovered during that particular focus was that many of the people, once they left the eye doctor, weren't aware that they had scheduled another appointment that was to be conducted 1 year away. That's sort of the industry standard, similar to your vehicle. The auto industry has said you're supposed to get your oil changed every 3,000 miles. So that's sort of just burned into our mindset. Well, the eye practice is no different. You're supposed to come back annually. And it looked as if percentage-wise, less than 20% of his people and their people were coming back when they were supposed to every year. So we actually watched the process occur literally in the exam room. And what we found was once the person came to the doctor and they checked in, the information for that patient was then put in a box and then grabbed by the doctor once it was time for their appointment. And inside that folder was a pre-written card that shared with them their next follow-up appointment and when it was going to be. And out of the 300 people that we talked with, less than half of them could ever remember even getting that card or saving that card. And so what we found was most people, when they called back and were sent the automated call reminder, reminder that your appointment is Thursday at 3 o'clock literally had no idea that they had scheduled an appointment. It was almost as if it was thrown upon them and never explained. And we called them phantom appointments.
You're listening to an exclusive interview found on Michael Senoff's HardToFindSeminars.com.
So, Brad, basically that almost worked in reverse, right? Because then they're thinking, well, I never made this. Why are they sending me this? So
yeah,
instead of gaining
perfect.
Loyalty.
Yeah, so glad you picked up on that. So now you're like arguing, right?
Right.
I mean, it's like I never set this appointment, and I'll specifically remember being on the phone listening to some of the recorded calls go out, because that's another approach that we have. And you would hear people say, I never set that appointment. You did.
And worse, they're probably going to their friends and saying, oh, that doctor, I liked him, but he does these things where he schedules an appointment when you haven't made one.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's just like really strange, right?
Yeah.
So we realize that the propensity there for people to miss their appointments the next year obviously was very, 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 very high. So that was one thing that we found. And what we were able to do, now you had to realize you had to wait, you know, about a year before you saw something improve, because those people were on schedule to come back a year. So immediately in January, I think it was, we implemented a new process. And what would happen is the doctor would give the patient the appointment card in the exam room. And instead of having the patient walk back to the checkout desk, the new process was the doctor walked out to the checkout desk with the patient with the card. And while the administration was there putting in the information, the doctor would say, now, Carolyn, I recommend that you come back next year. I've already set you up an appointment based on the time and date. Do you think that will work for you? So now you're having a conversation about what's going to occur a year later, and 80% of people would say, oh, yeah, no, that's fine. The doctor would then say, well, if you have your cell phone on you, could you pick it up and put this in your calendar so you don't forget? It's very important. We see you again. Another 50% of people would do that. Some of their patients were elderly and didn't have that functionality on their phone. And they'd have a conversation. The doctor would then walk away, and the office staff or the clerical physician would say, again, Carolyn, we have you down for January 11th at 11 a.m. I heard you tell the doctor that was going to work for you. Is that something that you feel is still going to be a good time? Now, you'll have some people, and the reason why we engineered this, we had some people who would say, no, that's not going to work. Actually, March 11th is going to be better. Well, that's exactly what we wanted, because then they would know when their appointments were. So long way to get through the short story here, but at the end of the day, their pre-appointment rate, which were called pre-appoint for simplicity, they had a 15 or 17% pre-appointment show rate. After this process was instituted and put into place in the year that it ran, they had over a 67% pre-appointment rate. It was one of the highest in the industry. So the retention rate was absolutely going through the roof because they brought it up and they talked about it. And I know that sounds so simple, but again, it's another leverage point. If they were leaking patients out of the practice who weren't agreeing with when their appointment was or when they were supposed to come back. So we brought it to the forefront as a checkout policy from the doctor and the clerical physician to fix that leaky revenue spot.
Right. And I think, Brad, too, when you're doing something day to day, you forget when somebody else comes into your world or your business world, it's different for them, and you really have to spell things out for people, right?
You do, and that's a perfect example of not being too assuming of things. Their day-to-day practice in that business isn't about marketing and sales. It's about getting the paperwork in and making sure it's accurate so there's no funny business that's had from their audits or not leaking patient information because it's so sensitive. Really, people assumed that the patients were just taking their word as what they were supposed to do, and it was never brought up into context. And so you have to get the assumption out of your head. I think it was Dan Kennedy who said, never underestimate the intelligence of the average consumer, because sometimes we have to spell things out for people. And essentially, that system and process, Chris, at the beginning was absolutely protested against. You can imagine simple tweak in a system, but reset strategies is all about change. And believe it or not, not too many people like change. When we brought this particular strategy up, it was completely protested against by lots of the clerical staff because they said, if we bring it up, people will cancel their appointment for next year. That was their assumption. And we had to tell them that, well, isn't that better than having them on the books and not being able to fill another spot with someone who does want to pay you money? Because if it's on the book for 11 o'clock and she doesn't show, you couldn't put anyone else there. That was literally going to come in. So we had to sell the staff on how this was actually going to help matters. And eventually we won, and the results speak for themselves. And the one thing that I really love about results is once somebody has some, they really get addicted to them. So when the clerical staff and the positioning and the other employees come back and they're not doing this process over and over again, the doctor really doesn't let that slide by anymore. And it's an implemented practice that has to occur at all times. It's just like McDonald's and their system. I mean, this is a system now to where you can reduce the amount of no-shows by increasing the amount of conversations on the front end about something that's going to happen within the next year. Now, do we think that that one conversation allowed us to receive such a high percentage of shows? Absolutely not. The secondary byproduct of mind conditioning someone to make sure they don't forget about you is we also noticed that from the one-year anniversary of their last appointment, they literally, Chris, 1 year's a long time, received one piece of correspondence about that appointment. And it was in the form of a letter basically touting, hey, make sure you come in. We're not sure if people received that or read it or how many of them did. So we instituted a new system that they got 6 touch points during the year that all had great information and that also talked about their upcoming appointment. And so we feel that combined with bringing it up on the front end and continuing to be in front of them 6 times over the course of the year, this wasn't something they were doing, really helped the retention of patients coming back each year. So it was a 2-pronged approach. Bring it up on the front end, make sure you stay in front of them until they come back.
For more exclusive interviews on business, marketing, advertising, and copywriting, go to Michael Senoff's hardtofindseminars.com.
And the touch points were those phone calls, postcards? How did you do that?
Yeah, great question. The touch points were a mix. We instituted a new software system that we recommended the office purchase, which was a text messaging software. People could opt in to be reminded via text. So we used email. We used 2 automated calls. We used a live call. We used a postcard. We used an email. And we used a lumpy mail piece about 4 weeks before their appointment. And for those who don't know what lumpy mail is, literal in the sense that it's not a flat envelope or a flat postcard. It's literally a lumpy piece of mail. And what we would send, it looked like glasses, actually, but they were made out of a plastic material, and they mailed out just as if they were glasses. They didn't go in a package. They were very sturdy. And it said on the lenses, we look forward to seeing you. And on the back of the lenses, it had the date of the appointment. That was the last touch point.
That's very creative.
Yeah, it stands out, of course. Also, too, from the surveys that we had conducted of the 300 people, and I believe, Chris, that you can get some pretty good ratios of patterns going forward if you do 300 to 500 calls. I think 300 to 450 calls of a customer base or non-customer base can give you some pretty good patterns. So you don't have to do 1,000 or 10,000. And one of the things that we noticed was some people made the comment of, yeah, I mean, they act like they don't even know me there. Well, everybody remembers, if you remember pop culture, the TV show Cheers, you know, and the jingle. Well, everybody does want to go somewhere where they know their name. So we knew it was probably a little impossible to instill a culture of Disney World, if you will, into a group of employees who had been working in the same environment together for businesses that's been around for 30 years. Most of them had been working there for a decade together. They were already habitual in their own mannerisms. So it's very hard to turn a Disney World culture into someone who's never even had that experience. So what we did was, and again, just borrowing this from other successful initiatives, is we placed a big floor sign when you first walked in to the practice. When you opened the door, the first thing you saw, we instituted a new policy, and it was done daily. You put everybody's name on the board that was coming in for an appointment, not their last, just their first, because of HIPAA. You put everyone's name on the welcome board when they first walk in, and it says, welcome, John, Gina, Stephanie, Henry, Joe, and you did that. that for the first half of the afternoon, and then they closed for lunch for 12 to 1. So between that time, we had them updated for the afternoon session, and we got them doing these name boards, and the doctor himself would tell us so many times during meetings, like, oh, yeah, people are always making comments about their name being on the board out there. And so it was another tool, because we knew we weren't going to be able to rely on the employee to do it 100% of the time, but we knew that if they could write it down, it would always be there. So, again, can you measure that? Unfortunately not. There's some intangibles. Certainly can't measure Disney World's treatment to people, but everyone knows it's good. So those are some of the things that we're talking about here, things that go above and beyond ads, brochures, social media, fancy graphics, things of that nature. Moving past that, trying to create a culture of embracement, really.
I want to stop you there for a minute, Brad, just because that's interesting for me to hear with a long time kind of traditional radio background. One of the most frustrating things for us has often been when we were selling traditional advertising, you know, often we'd run campaigns for people and then we would be involved in their business and see what was happening on the other end and see that they were missing so many steps. You know, there was nothing the advertising could have done to actually increase their revenues because, you know, they weren't covering the phone or things like that. So it's interesting to hear you say how you guys go in and you really look at these things and have some brilliantly creative ideas, it sounds like, too, you know, fun things.
You're exactly right, Chris. I mean, I came from the traditional advertising background as well. I sold radio, matter of fact, one of the largest beer distributors in the United States, one of the largest ice cream companies in the United States were clients of mine. I also sold print and mobile advertising for one of the largest Fortune 10 companies. So I'm with you. I completely agree that most people, unfortunately, drop the ball when advertising does work, hence the reason why we try to fix all of that through the first six steps before we get to the final frontier, which is advertising again. Because once they do advertising again in a different way or a optimized way, they'll be able to yield the fullest productivity. So it's about putting those systems and processes in place to be able to take advantage when advertising does work.
So, Brad, when you first went into this optician's office, how much actual revenue were they leaving behind by not having systems in place?
$3.1 million is where we pegged it.
For the year?
Yes.
Wow.
I'm not kidding. That's the number we presented. I mean, we had it all itemized based on what we felt like we could conservatively retain with percentages and all with different systems and processes. I mean, Chris, here's another great example. No-shows. Earlier, I'm talking about people that aren't coming to their appointment. So that's called a no-show, and they would tabulate how many no-shows would occur. And there's a process that they were using. So their process was what they call a confirmation call, which is an automated call that's sent out to the phone number of the patient that has an automated voice that says, hi, this is such and such from Dr. such and such at such and such, such and such of associates. Your appointment scheduled for 4 o'clock Wednesday, June 2nd. Please call us back if you need to reschedule. Well, do you know how many people have the best of intentions to not let people think that they're not going to show, but then work happens, a sick child occurs, an emergency phone call happens, I'm tired, that phone call, I heard the message at 10 a.m., at 6 a.m., I have no recollection. We noticed that even though people would not call back and reschedule, and even, Chris, those people who did call back and confirm, there were still patients that no-showed, right? So part of the game. He had one of the highest no-show rates in the industry. It was like 23%. It was outrageous. And we thought, okay, what if we created a system that 30 minutes after someone's appointment and they weren't there, what if one of the staff picked up the phone and called the people? And I was like, oh, never thought of that before. And then I said, well, maybe 30 minutes is too long. What if we do it in 15? Because that way we could still tell people, hey, you can still come in. We could see you. And then my business partner negotiated us down to 10 minutes. So now it was set. So 10 minutes after an appointment was missed, a phone call was generated live by a staff member. And the way that it opened was when someone answered the phone, hi, Jenny, this is Sharon over at such and such associates. I'm just wondering, is everything okay? That was the script. Oh, my gosh, I'm supposed to be there. Oh, I completely forgot. I am so sorry. I can be there in the next 10 minutes. Great. Doctor has put on his schedule. I'll let him know you will be arriving just a few moments late. And once they started doing that, they ended up getting 4 and almost 5 out of 10 no-shows that were happening on a daily basis to come back into the office the same day simply because they made that live phone call. They'd never done that before. So now you've got more revenue coming in the door versus leaking out the door. So what did we do with the other 4 or 5 or 6 no-shows? Well, we also found out that those people weren't receiving another item from the eye practice after they no-showed an appointment for 6 months after they no-showed the appointment. Well, by that time, it's just out of my life, out of my world, out of my desire. So we incorporated a quick, if we weren't able to get them on the phone and they didn't call us back within 48 hours, part of the new system was within 72 hours, a postcard goes out. And the postcard was completely optimized. It had a picture of the doctor on it. It had a post-it note. And it went out in a big, huge, I think it was 6x9. I mean, a big, fat postcard. The other postcards they were sending out before were the type that you'd send from a vacation or something. It gets lost in the mail pretty easy. And so this thing stuck out. And on the front end, it said, sorry, we missed you, on the post-it note. And it had a picture of the doctor on the front, whatever doctor they saw or were supposed to see. And one of the things that when you turned it over, it says, hi, John, I was told that you weren't able to come to your appointment at such and such time on such and such time, and I really missed you. I'd really like to see you again, like it was a message from the doctor. See, originally they were sending messages like from the company. Nobody wants to talk to a company. They want to talk to a person. So we started utilizing new system to get more no-shows back on the appointment schedule in a quicker amount of time. So you can imagine I'm talking about these things individually, but when you start the compound effect, just like any interest rate or any interest-bearing money account, once you start compounding the welcome board, the process, the checkout, the conversation, the direct mail, the touch points, the automated call, the live call, the doctor sending, you get 7 or 9 of these things working like a V12 engine. And it's all fueling growth from where you were leaking money. So we updated the phone appointment reminder script. They also had a process where they were calling out if someone confirmed their appointment. Then they were to receive another call 3 days before their appointment from a live staff member. Now, unfortunately, the doctor had thought that 100% of those were happening. What we found out was less than 30% were. And the reason we got was we're so busy up here, we can't make these calls, we can't keep track of all this stuff all the time, and we've got paperwork that's going on. We thought, okay, we need to systematize again. So we found an employee who had 4 hours of what we observed her doing of unimportant tasks. The doctor's still paying her the same amount of money, but for 4 hours a day, it seemed like she wasn't really doing a lot consistently. So the recommendation to the doctor was, hey, what if you'll allow us to take Jennifer and place her in a role of customer service, client advocate, patient advocate, whatever the title it is, to actually make sure 100% of these phone calls happen? And he agreed. And so now we had a scenario where 100% of the time the live phone call reminder was going out and the voicemails that were left for the appointment reminder, because remember, we're trying to decrease no-shows, originally was, hi, John, this is Sandy calling from Dr. Such-and-Such office, calling about your appointment on Monday at 7 o'clock. Call us back if you need to reschedule or something like that on the voicemail. Well, we found out that not very many people called back. Now, this is where you'll have to give a little bit of marketing spin credit here. The new voicemail message was, hi, Jennifer, this is Sandy calling from Dr. Such-and-Such offices. Dr. Such-and-Such wanted me to call you because he has a question. Please call me at blank, 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 355-5555. How many phone calls do you think we got back then?
Probably a lot.
You're listening to an interview on Michael Senoff's HardToFindSeminars.com.
A ton. And the question was, are you going to be at your appointment Monday at 7 p.m.? Yes. So it worked beautifully. So updating that information to come from the doctor. So changing the appointment reminder scripting, personalizing the postcard. Oh, gosh, Chris, the gentleman has been in business for 30 years, and he had a record-breaking year, to say the least, from all of these things being implemented. But the biggest hemorrhaging of money came from people who would call and cancel their appointments. So once we were able to decipher all the analysis from the doctor's office reporting, we noticed there was an exuberant number of people who did the right thing that called and canceled their appointments. Hey, I'm not able to make it in on February, whatever. And the staff member would take them out of the system and put cancel, and they put them in this, what we call a tickler file in the marketing business, the system where you put people into when you want to do an automated reminder or something. It's sort of, you know, the tickler file is the slang term for follow-up system. And they would put these people in the cancellation system, but the cancellation system never had a structure to remind them to follow back up on the people who canceled. We uncovered 4,971 people who canceled within 6 months that had never been called, contacted, to come back in 2 years.
Wow. That's really throwing money off the table.
That is a ton of money. Now, the first instinct is, oh my gosh, it's too late. We've lost these people. The longer we go, they can get their services from somewhere else, or they stop getting their service. Like, we don't know if it's too late, but what we do know is moving forward, we've got a way to completely reduce that from happening. Now, albeit it was a manual process on the front end, it's now systematized. But once someone canceled, obviously there was a different messaging point, because what we also noticed is when they called in to cancel and they said, yes, I can't make my appointment. So this is John Jenkins. I can't make my appointment on Wednesday at 4 p.m. Okay, great. All right. Well, just give us a call back whenever you can, and we'll get you back on the schedule. Talk about a fresh out, right? So the new scripting came into, oh, gosh, John, I'm sorry to hear that. Is everything okay? Oh, yeah, everything's fine. It's just my mother-in-law, my father-in-law, my son, my daughter, whatever the reason was, says, okay, not a problem at all. I've removed you from the schedule. What's the next best available day? I mean, we're picking up 25, 27% rescheduling right there on the spot that they never had before, because they never had that system. So then all the others that would cancel, we would, within 72 hours, same person, same lady who helped us on the reminder, would call and say, oh, I understand you weren't able to make your appointment last Thursday at 11, and Dr. such and such wanted me to give you a call and to make sure to get you back on the schedule. While we're on the phone, I'm going to say it again, while we're on the phone, one of the most powerful phrases you can use, while we're on the phone, what day works best for you? Now they were getting additional 36% of people rescheduling because we engineered the contact point. Now the good news is that this company, this practice, this medical practice, had moved from being a corporate-looking juggernaut to personal concierge services, calling out, making sure we didn't miss anybody, and we actually called the cancellation policy the no patient left behind, which was a spin from Bush's era of no child left behind. And so that system works now fluidly in his offices. So every week he gets a new batch of cancels, and there's a handful of doctors there. And every week someone calls them and recoups them back on the appointment schedule. And all of that is the money he was already paying the employee to begin with. She's just now doing more productive work to give more output for the dollar for her services. So there's no advertising dollars invested. It's just taking advantage of the time that you already have available just by doing something differently that produces more results.
And so, Brad, how much did their revenues increase?
So they had a record-breaking year. So they were a little over $2 million, $2.5 million. Now, remember, that's gross revenues. That's not reimbursement payout. Completely different in the healthcare field. But he was able to see a $1.9 million increase in revenues in the first year with an expense of 12% versus the original expense of 20-something percent on TV, radio, cinema, the whole deal. Virtually cut it in half.
What had he been spending on advertising?
He had been spending somewhere around $500,000 to acquire clients.
Per year?
Yeah, when it all said and done, newspaper, cinema advertising was monstrous. He advertised in lots of cinemas. Are you familiar with that platform? So when you go to the movies and before the movies, yeah, he was real big there. So I'm looking at some of the emails that we received, one from him. If we use the receipt per patient, I think the receipt per night. That was the first week of the phone call reminder script. So in the first week, it was a 24-to-1 ROI, which is pretty big.
And also, you know, we're talking numbers here, but certainly just to have people being happy coming into his practice, I'm sure gave him a lot of satisfaction. I know a lot of doctors really value and appreciate that.
You know, you have to realize, too, and I had to really understand, you know, doctors don't come from a business or marketing school. They come from the doctor's school. So we had to really influence his understanding of marketing and how important he was in the exam room for everything that was going on. And I think the mindset shift that he was causing some of the bottlenecks by not being proactive and fixing some of the leaks, realized that he really had to up his game while he was in the exam room to give everybody an enjoyable experience. I'll give you another great example about the exam room optimization. And because I've been to Disney World, I just borrow this concept. And when we're resetting something, Chris, we're working on a specific part of the business. So you can tell all of this that I'm sharing with you right now, I haven't mentioned anything about the glasses or the dispensary, as they call it, or the prescription contact until someone or some result come back from the company that what we're doing to reset a certain portion of the business hits a certain benchmark, or we feel like it's good to go and it's automated enough and it's habitual enough, then we'll move on to the other side of the business practice. So I'll give you an example. Once we were finished doing all of the front end, confirming, having conversations about appointment, making sure the cancellations came back, making sure the no-shows were reduced, making sure we could get people back in, doing the name board and treating people in a different way. And there were lots of other things that we implemented there that the technician, that they call them in that business, she would open the door and she would yell out, "Jennifer Hadley," right? You've been to a doctor's office before, right? We stopped that. We actually implemented a process where the technician walked all the way out into the rating room as she was looking and smiling at people, and she would say, "Jennifer Hadley." And depending upon the gender in the room, she could situate herself between who Jennifer was, because it's a female and over here is four men in a row. So she would get closer to the patient instead of yelling across the room, and she would say, "The doctor would like to see you now. I'll walk you back." You can't quantify it. You can't measure it. It's just the treatment at Disney World. So again, I'm only sharing a few things, but there were so many other variables within that whole system that became like clockwork to them. But once we got the front end working really well, we moved into the prescription glasses and contacts area. And what we found was a very low number of people who were going to the actual dispensary, which is where they sell the glasses. Once they left their appointment from the doctor, even if the doctor recommended they go get fitted for glasses or contacts, he was walking them out and he was talking about the appointment, but we hadn't instituted anything to get them over to the dispensary, which is on the opposite side of the building. Again, this is all observation during these types of resets. You've got to look for every angle to exploit and all the profit sources. So we noticed, though, that of those people who did go to the dispensary, they had like a 90% close rate. So that told us, okay, if we can get the people over there, then we stand a better chance of fitting them with glasses, adjusting their glasses for free, talking about glasses, fashion, whatever, sports, hobbies, what are you doing? Are you biking? You need some of these? You need a backup pair of sunglasses? Whatever it was. Well, the problem was they just weren't even getting over to the dispensary. They would just walk out after the checkout. Have you been to Disney World before, Chris? When you get off a ride at Disney World, what happens after you exit the ride? Where do you have to walk through?
I don't know.
The gift store.
Oh, the gift store, of course, yeah.
You're listening to an exclusive interview found on Michael Sinoff's HardToFindSeminars.com.
So you walk outside of Space Mountain to try to get back outside, and you're walking through the Space Mountain gift shop. You see, Disney World knows that the most vulnerable point of anybody buying anything is when adrenaline is high. Hence the reason why everybody buys those silly roller coaster pictures, and then 5 months after, they're going, "What the heck did I buy this thing for?" So I thought, we've got to get these people to walk through the dispensary. At least walk through, at least see. It's on the other side of the building. You don't even have to go that way if you don't want to. New system deployed. Now the doctor walks the patient out to the checkout station, says the conversation about the appointment, has the conversation about confirming and all that. Then he says, "Shelley," which is the optician, there's a dozen of them over there. Shelley comes up to the patient. Doctor says, Jenkins had a wonderful exam. It looks as if she's going to need some assistance in X. Shelley, why don't you give her a helping hand? Now, it's very uncomfortable for Miss Jenkins to say, oh, no, I'm okay. So most people went ahead and met with Shelley. So what Shelley would do, the first question, new policy, new system, are you familiar with what your insurance handles, Miss Jenkins? Oh, I have no idea, none whatsoever. We would literally find a big, big number of people, Chris, that didn't even know that their insurance covered glasses, contacts, prescription sunglasses, until we actually pulled their insurance and made them aware of it. Literally, money was walking out the door for benefits that somebody had already paid for, because they're paying their monthly insurance premium every month, or their company is. So people would have $200, $300, $400, $600 insurance coverage for glasses, contacts, whatever, and literally never use them because they didn't even know. So once we started getting patients coming over and talking with all the opticians, dispensary sales went through the roof. They call it a capture rate in that industry. A capture rate is referred to as someone who comes into a dispensary and they capture them as a paying customer for glasses, sunglasses, or contacts. The capture rate when we first started with the industry norm is around 52%, right? If you average up, I think the Independent Optometry Association added up something around like 4.9 million opticians in the U.S., and of those, the average capture rate was running a little over 50%, 52%. This practice's capture rate was 31%. Not good. After 7 months or 8 months of implementing the new deployment of the system, their capture rate hit 68%, all because we engineered the conversation. Not fancy, but important.
So, Brad, you obviously you worked for this client, and they changed a whole lot of ways that they do business. What do you think were the most important things that they did that provided the best results for them?
The most important really was going after the orphan. People know the meaning of that term. The orphans were the people who were overlooked, never contacted again, never recalled. So in my opinion, the live phone calls, the recapturing of cancellations, and increasing the number of people who showed up were the three most important components in this particular company. No question. I'm looking at some emails here. You know, there's one here that says, it appears that cut in Medicare fees will take place, 27%. Thank God we took steps to increase the number of patients we reschedule. Thank you, Reset. Another email. Total patients seen for medical and vision were up 17%. This is telling us that early on, the Reset program to reduce no-shows, cancellations, and reactivate patients has been a huge success. We got an email in July. Just a thanks to everyone who went the extra mile in July, worked extra hours, or worked extra hard. July is always the slowest month of the year, but this year, with reactivation, no patient left behind, and others, it was the busiest year ever with 30 years in business. So again, one thing we can't take away from systems and processes, Chris, is they never run out. This strategy, and the doctor has always told us, it's the gift that keeps on giving because it's a system. It can constantly be deployed. Unlike AdWords, which once you stop paying Google, your ad doesn't show anymore. When you stop advertising on television, no one sees it anymore. When you stop advertising on radio, no one hears it anymore. When you stop advertising in magazines, no one sees it. Strategies and process are the gift that keeps on giving because you do them no matter what for the rest of your life. You know, there is no stopping live calls from happening. There is no stopping the postcards from going out. That's going to be part of their business structure forever. And so you can't really justify that into words. So I think tactically, I answered your question as far as what were the three things or what were the things you think were the most important, but I want to give you an answer that's more strategic. The number one thing the doctor did that was most important to change his business is he agreed to change. And I know that sounds cliche, but it's absolutely certain.
And that's not an easy thing to do when you have something, especially like you said, when it's a 30-year business with people that have worked there for a long time and they're set in their ways. So that's a big leap.
Yeah, we even took a very bold and strategic move. We noticed that the glasses, you know, part of the reason why people purchase glasses, or one of the more comforting confidence builders in glasses purchases, is the warranty, right? I mean, there's nothing worse than buying a pair of glasses and your son riding them over with a bicycle, or you dropping them off in a pond, or you scratching them up, and you've had them for a year. Well, you're SOL because the warranty's run out. So we realized that we could create a claim and literally deliver on the strongest warranty in the country. And the way we did this was we went through the reports, and we noticed that there wasn't that many people who would come in and need to use their warranty for exchange of the glasses or prescription contacts or prescription sunglasses, meaning the number of people who needed to use their warranty was very, 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 very low. So we thought, okay, and this goes back to Michael Sinoff's system called Hard to Find Seminars about a unique selling proposition. This practice didn't have a unique selling proposition. It was like, me too, we sell glasses, me too, we do eye exams, me too. It was me too marketing is what we call that, commodity curve. So we analyzed the numbers and we unveiled the strongest warranty in the country. And it was the best in glass, you know, play off of best in class, best in class warranty of 13 years. Walmart has a 1 year warranty.
Yeah, 13 years, that's a long time.
13 year warranty. And we made huge announcements. When you walked into the dispensary, there was this big fat sign that was right in front of you, very nicely displayed. It said best in glass, 13 year warranty, ask your optician for details. We also created a certificate of warranty, much like the authenticated warranty certificate that you get if you bought something very expensive. You know, you've gotten those formal warranty certificates. Have you ever seen those before?
Yeah.
So we created a warranty certificate, gold foiled stamp with their name on it, that was handed to them in a glass enclosure. Like, we made a big deal about it. You've ever seen baseball cards that are in like a glass cover to protect it from getting ripped corners or something? I don't know if you ever have, but I was a big baseball card kid. And we would hand that to people, literally. And it was heavy, right? Because kinesthetically, you want people to realize how strong this is. You know, there's nothing worse than liking a piece of furniture and then all of a sudden getting up to it and trying to pick it up and it feels light as a feather. Well, you know, the wood's fake, right? There's something different when you run up to a piece of furniture and you grab it and it's so hard and heavy, you can't even lift it. Now you can justify the price tag. So the 13-year warranty, however, was a add-on that you could do as long as you purchased scratch protection and I think it was two other things. So now what do we do? We're engineering the upsell. They never had an upsell before. The average transaction in the dispensary was $434 before reset came in. The average transaction after the dispensary reset was $615, 13-year warranty. And to this day, people can't believe it's that long. And guess how many people have tried to take advantage of it in the 1 year since it's been initiated? Any guess?
One.
One person. If people can logically get comfortable with what's really going to happen, they can logically make better decisions. You know, think about Netflix for a minute. I think maybe you and I have spoke about Netflix before and their business model. This is when they were doing the mailing, not the streaming, but when you could get DVDs in your mail. Guy says, yeah, let's do $8.99 as a monthly subscription. I'm not sure what it was when it first came out. Guy says, yeah, that sounds good. What's that get them? Oh, well, they can order up to 20 movies a month. 20 movies a month? We'll go bankrupt. Well, the other guy in the room says, well, our results actually show, or our superficial studies or our early studies show that only 1.2 movies will be ordered by the average person. So they know that there are going to be some people who push the limit and try to take advantage of really gracious offers. But you've got to get out of the prevention focus and the prevention mindset. You've got to go back into the promotion mindset. You've got to go, yeah, but can I get 100 more sales because I do it for everyone who wants to take advantage of it? Or do you want to prevent yourself from making more sales just because one person might take advantage of it?
For more exclusive interviews on business, marketing, advertising, and copywriting, go to Michael Sinoff's Hard to Find Seminars. .com.
It's nonlinear thinking. You can't think linear. You've got to think nonlinear. You've got to know the numbers of what really happens. I mean, you can open a Snickers bar and eat it. If you're not satisfied, you can literally send the packet back for a Snickers bar. Now, I've never met anybody who's ever done that. But the guarantee is another secret to growth without advertising, because if you have an ironclad guarantee, you can do a lot, because other competitors are too weak and too timid and too worried to guarantee anything. I'll give you a great example. We work with a big supplier of tools and safety supplies in the industrial construction industry. Lots of competition. And we noticed that 96% of what was ordered from them, I think through like 5,000 or 6,000 SKUs, were always in stock. Like literally, like we could say, hey, we've got what you need when you need it, whenever you need it, guaranteed in stock. That's what we could say. So we made it even better. And we had the owner add to the inventory. Now in this day and age, that is absolutely, absolutely 180 degrees of what other companies are doing. They're eliminating inventory to control their costs. We got our client to invest in his. Completely counterintuitive.
I was going to say, that's the last company on earth that does that, I think.
Yeah. And so, believe me, though, Chris, when we say it wasn't an easy sell, the client was not so fast to move on that one. That one took a while. Okay, but needless to say, we finally proved it to him. We got him started with 100 things, and then we went to 250 things. And then the way we tested it is we said, Steve, I'm going to reveal something here that I don't recommend people doing unless they have the finances and if you want to do certain things, but Reset Strategies took the risk for the client. We said, hey, listen, I'll tell you what we'll do. Our new USP is largest local inventory, in-stock guarantee or whatever the first phase was. If you don't have it, you'll pay that company that was trying to order it $25 for not having what they needed. What? You got to be kidding me. And Reset is going to pay it. We remove the risk from the client. See, sometimes you've got to be able to practice what you preach, right? So we said, hey, no worries. We'll pay every $25 card that comes back to you. We'll do it. We're that confident that this will go over well. We don't think they'll give out one single card. We were right. Then we moved it to $250. Did the same thing. We upped it to $50 if they didn't have what they needed. Then we went to $500. Then we went to $1,000. Then we went to $1,500. At the end of the day, today, our number one message point is everything you need in stock, guaranteed. Everything is now guaranteed to be in stock. And we've been able to capture much more business because now everyone thinks we have it, and if they order it for someone else, they'll have to wait. Well, profits are being squeezed, construction margins are going down, productivity schedules are increasing. These guys don't have time to wait, but we've also done a great job, I say we as the company, in terms of our client, you know, being part of them, of analyzing exactly, based on what the client does or company does, what they will need. I mean, don't get me wrong, there was a six-month, very heavy, intensive investigation of what they were ordering from other people, what kind of jobs they were on, what they would be ordering when they needed. We've literally customized a 16,000 square foot warehouse with items that we know are going to get ordered and we know that we're going to have. And here's what I love. It's gone over so well, not because everything's in stock guaranteed, but the clients want to test us on it. So they're ordering more stuff. Oh, I'm going to get that $50 gift card. And they never do. I'm going to wipe you guys out. And you're going to have to pay me 5 of those things. All right, bring it on, Jerry.
That makes a lot of sense, too. I mean, people are tired of people not having things because,
yeah,
as you said, so many people now are doing that, you know, well, when they order, we'll send it if we have it.
Yeah, if we have it. Who knows if they even have it? So, again, another example of how to create an ironclad guarantee to steal business away from other competitors without having to spend money on advertising. And the way we got the messaging out was we had the salespeople. They have, you know, obviously outside salespeople, for the first time actually had something they could cold call somebody about without feeling like a salesperson. Hey, just wanted to share with you, we've got the largest local inventory in town, everything in stock guaranteed. We invite you to test our inventory or we'll pay you if we don't have it. Would you like me to do a test quote? I mean, literally, that's what's happening. People are going, oh, this sounds too good to be true, which is exactly what we want people to say because now we get to get in a conversation with them. Before salespeople, what would they do? They would call up. Yeah, this is Chad over at Tools and Safety. Yeah, I know you've never ordered anything from us, man. You know, we got some stuff here. What do you order? I mean, just a common sales call versus the proud effect of walking into a business knowing that no one else in your market is saying what you're saying. There's no feeling like it. And talk about competitive differentiation. And even if a company, let's say, does decide to say that, it will be probably 2 years before that happens. Because history tells us a lot of things. I mean, when Pepsi came out with the 12-ounce can, I think it took Coke something like 12 years before they went to a 12-ounce can. But it sounds like common sense. Would you come out with a 12-ounce can a week after Pepsi came out with it? They didn't. We'll already have done enough good in the community and the market of getting people habitually buying us already that they will be second. So we're first to market with this messaging, which is always the place to be. And we know that many people won't go the opposite way of growing inventory. They're only going to shrink it. So we're playing our strategy on it. Really, that strategy comes from A.J. Lastly, who was the CEO at Procter & Gamble. He wrote a great book called Playing to Win, Figuring Out Where to Play and How to Win. And we took that strategy framework, and that's what we uncovered. And it's working like gangbusters. But again, Chris, the prevention mindset of all these strategies can really hold people back. You see, advertising is an easy decision. You write a check, although I use that term in a relative nature. But guaranteeing something, a lot more risk, a lot more responsibility, and you forget that 98% of people are actually out there to do good, and there's just a couple of bad apples that want to take advantage of you. But the good outweighs the bad, and so let's go for it. You have to be bold. You know, I'm reading a book right now called How to Be a Billionaire, Wealth Strategies and Tactics. It's written by Martin Rittman. Great book. Rockefeller, Walton, Kurt Kevorkian, Buffett, Gates. And the number one strategy in that book that this gentleman exposes that they all did, not only did they take risks, but the word in front of the word risk, they took monumental risk. And so it's a lot for a business owner to say, yeah, let's guarantee everything without feeling like you want to throw up. Or, yeah, let's do a 13-year warranty without feeling like, oh my gosh, I'm going to get clobbered. By giving away all kinds of glasses or even an elevator company where we performed a situation where in the elevator industry you have contracts. So we told the client we're going to be the only company in the country not to have contracts. What, are you kidding me? Got to have contracts. People won't live up to their obligations. Well, we have agreements. We're just not going to call them contracts anymore. And we're going to let people out of them after 30 days. But the other competitors, it's on auto renewal. They don't even get to get out of the contract unless they call in a certain amount of time or send us a letter in a 90-day window before the renewal runs up. That's exactly why we're running the opposite way. Why in the world should someone be forced to stay with the service if they're not satisfied? We're going to get more sales from no contract than we are from contracts, and we get more sales by telling people you can get out in 30 days if you're not completely tickled and thrilled, then keep them in a binding contract where they've got to race against time to figure out when the five-day window is before the auto-renewal comes up, right? I mean, but those are big risks for people. So we don't take them lightly. We don't say, oh, my gosh, I can't believe this is something you're willing to green light. Believe me, these are multiple conversations with lots of data and analysis behind it to share that the risk of succeeding far exceeds the risk of losing. So I want to give credit and justification to the process, but I also want to give more credit and justification to the owner who takes that stride, who takes that leap. And then those that do, they're handsomely rewarded. And at the end of the day, Reset Strategies puts a guarantee on their marketing plan. If we don't see a 3-to-1 ROI at the end of the year, there's a certain monetary payback. You know, so we put our neck out there too.
Well, it's interesting too, Brad, isn't it, that, you know, often it seems like the business folks are afraid of these ideas and the very ideas that could bring them a lot of success. And meanwhile, they're not watching all the losses that you mentioned that Reset Strategies finds in their business that are going by the wayside daily.
And the reason why we went with that particular formula, Chris, and I might be giving away too much information here for people, but behavioral studies over decades and decades and decades show that people desire to prevent loss more than they desire to gain gains. Actually. So people will do more work behaviorally not to lose something on a behavior scenario than they will work harder to gain something. So in the market, most marketing firms are talking about making more money, making more sales, making more connections, making more relationships. We said, boy, what can we say that's any different? So we come out and we say, oh, I know. Let's talk about the money they're losing. And boy, you talk about ears perk up, like, losing? How am I losing money? Oh, well, right here in this particular system, you've got, you know, 15 customers walking out the door. So the whole mindset from gain to loss is actually a monumental shift in someone's paradigm. It doesn't happen overnight. I mean, you do realize that the 30-day reset, I mean, we are with that client upwards of 6 to 10 times in person doing workshops, and we are really developing that relationship with the client. And then the whole time we're doing that, we're creating the relationship so that when we come to the table with the plan, they know what the plan's going to look like because they've worked with us on it. And we show them and expose them how much money they're losing, which is a lot easier to do because it's done on cold, hard facts, because you could look at an industry average and you could say, geez, doctor, you know, the industry average here is 42%. You're at 36%. If your transaction is this, if you're at the industry average, you could be getting this is the amount of money you're losing versus, yeah, you can advertise in my print publication and, you know, you could make $10,000 extra. Well, that's not really feasible. There's no facts behind that. So we can certainly show the money that you're losing, and then you show them the money that they can cover it without having to advertise. So ironclad guarantees are a really good way to grow without advertising, because you can shout from the rooftop and people will notice because it's something different that they've never heard. But it's hard to get companies to do that unless you can prove that your strategy will prevail. And we've been doing this a long time, and it's certainly not to be taken with a light heart, for sure.
Brad, that was fantastic. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
And thanks for sharing all your strategies and insight with what you do with Reset Strategies. Great stuff.
Absolutely. You're welcome. I always enjoy it and hope people can gain some perspective. And the biggest takeaway that I want people to gain, because I have no gain from it, I'm just giving information, is there are things that are hiding right under your nose in a business that if optimized and leveraged correctly, I know it sounds like hypey sales pitch, but you can literally double, triple, or quadruple your sales results and profits if you just find out what they are and fix them, and then start going out and advertising to strangers so that when they do come through the door or they do call or they come to your website, you're more prepared to get the upsell, to get the average transaction up, to get the referral.
That's the end of our second interview with Brad Gaines. I hope you found it helpful. And for more great interviews like this, go to Michael Senoff's HardToFindSeminars.com.